Some of the proponents of structural interventions include Blankenship is a researcher who talks about this structural intervention as some of the policies that we enforce to produce health. So when we look at structural intervention, this is not basically health education, because health education is a voluntary adaptation. We could instruct a group of kids about the impact of tobacco cessation, but then it is the choice of the recipient of such information whether to use it or not. If it is structural intervention, these are policies, be they local, state, or federal. It means you are forced to actually abide by the policy. A typical structural intervention that is unique today is the seatbelt. It is mandatory that we put on our, we buckle up before we drive. That is structural intervention, whether we believe it or not. It is also structural intervention that anyone who is drunk should not go behind the wheel. It is structural intervention because if you are caught, you end up in jail for detox. So those are all elements of structural intervention. And the emergence of virulent infectious diseases creates the need to enact these policies and regulations to forestall the spread of these deadly pathogens. Many of these regulations are termed structural intervention. As an epidemiologist, I just want to provide some synopsis. Recently, by May of 1995, Kikwit Zaire was struck with Ebola virus. At that time, Ali Khan and a number of molecular geneticists, they went to Zaire. The observance, the burial processes whereby people will gather around, because in that African region, if someone is dead, we will just subsume the individual has gone to join the ancestors, so you don't run away from the corpse, because the corpse is washed, very nice perfume is spread over the corpse, and people gather around. With Ebola virus, you couldn't do that because people were dying. There was this chain of death. When WHO came, CDC came, the very first observance was stay away from any corpse. If you don't stay away, there will be disaster. That was a typical structural intervention, which after a period of about a month, death from Ebola virus subsided. It was not treatment, because as we speak, there is no drug to actually cure the Ebola infectivity. So this is what I mean by structural intervention. So we have all these policies. They are all legal policies which are prepared to restrict and reduce risk associated with any number of diseases, including the abuse of alcohol, physical psychological danger associated with availability and use of alcohol, which is completely poorly understood. In many of our communities in Chicago, as I drive around this place I call home, I saw advertising agencies. I'm always seeing various advertising agencies for alcohol, tobacco in African American neighborhoods. These are like joints. On Friday, the areas get clustered. I see the same advertising in Hispanic neighborhoods. As I drive around, periodically, I see tears just welling down my cheek. So I went to a friend of mine, and I'm not going to hesitate to mention his name. He's a pastor at the Fenwood Methodist Church. His name is R. Samson, Dr. Reverend R. Samson. I went to him and asked him, what could we do to reduce this advertising which is targeted at African Americans and Hispanic? What are some of the legal ramifications of this advertising. Are there things we could do to reduce this? What my colleague told me was that this is public information. We cannot stipulate laws to pull down the ad because these people also have their right. But then we could do some work with our children, mostly the underage kids. So that's what I'm going to be talking about this afternoon. So structural intervention, identify sources of public health problems in regard to those social, economic, and political environment that shape and constrain individual, community, and health outcomes of society. So some of the abstinence issues we are dealing with right now do not focus exclusively on sexual activity. We are talking about abstinence in regard to alcohol, mostly among minors. It should not happen. Abstinence from sexual activity should also not happen among kids that are very young. Instead, we should start self-esteem issue, altruistic activities, getting these children to teach our grandparents how to use their medication on a regular basis. What I'm saying right here is that there could be visual impairment because of aging, diseases like glaucoma, astigmatism, you name it. So if these children can come to the homes of our elderly women and men and read the medicine bottle to them, so that we are not getting misuse and ineffective compliance with medication, these children get very excited that they are performing such social services. So there are alternatives. That's what I find very interesting in regard to this particular issue. So what we have done in this literature review is to confirm the broad spectrum of health areas among interviewees, describe policies involving structural interventions in African American communities and Hispanic communities, list specific risk factors associated with HIV/AIDS. So this is basically open-ended. I would also like to warn that when you find responses from interviewees in regards to structural intervention, they are not comfortable. There are certain statements you will find some of the interviewees make that are not even politically correct. So do not be surprised if you see such structural statement as we go through this process. So phase one dealt with the qualitative assessment of structural intervention in public health, which are pertinent to risk reduction about HIV transmission among respondents of African American ancestry and Hispanics. So the component of such structural intervention identified specific policies, laws about statutory rape. What I'm saying right here is that there are instances of rape which should be punished because these are underage kids that cannot distinguish between right and wrong. So I don't have so much time. I'm going to rush this a little bit. Because of this, interviewees were asked to state why routine health education has not significantly reduced incidence of HIV. They were asked to critically specify those structural interventions that could be most unique and effective in reducing HIV. So I want to just quickly list what the reasons were. The very first reasons was that the respondent stated that, these are the questions. What are the types of alcohol available? What are the health implications of restriction on public drinking? The reasons stated by them include the following. The public, particularly young adults, are in denial, which is very true. They don't believe that this HIV really exists, and quite often many of our young people talk about conspiracy theory and the rest of it. The public, particularly younger, does not think that there are risks of getting HIV. The public is either too slow or just not willing to change their sexual behavior. Most people do not live by example. This is very critical. It's critical because we have seen Catholic priests who abuse altar boys. And does it mean these same religious leaders do not teach us in the churches? They do. So we don't see them going by examples. I don't have too much time. Some of the other five unique and appropriate mechanisms is to enforce abstinence, mandatory partner notification of HIV status, mostly those who are from jail, and mandatory needle exchange, mandatory reporting of drug use offenders, and then implementation of laws that enforce all HIV positive individuals to report for testing every 6 months if they are drug addicts. These are some of the reasons given for the African American community. The same thing existed in the Hispanic community: enforcement of abstinence, mandatory screening of young adults seeking visa to enter US, mandatory partner notification, stringent sentence for not notifying sexual partner. This is what we call the syndrome of down low. Many of our imprisoned candidates who are coming out of jail, because of that euphoria of love of those you were in relationship with, once you find them, you don't ask questions before going into relationship with them, which causes major problem, because infectivity from HIV can occur. But education changes all of that. And these are the statistics on HIV. That's why we are so worried about this. You see, the chlamydia situation in Chicago, syphilis situation in Chicago, look at gonorrhea, and then syphilis again, HIV. This is the HIV data in Chicago. So the question I keep asking is, why is it that the Caucasian female, for one reason or the other, now report the lowest HIV statistics in Chicago and all of Illinois? It is empowerment. I'm talking of empowerment due to socioeconomic status, and then the issue of education. Education synthesized by reading, self-development, and the rest of it. So these are some of the findings we have. On the basis of this, NIH has encouraged me to do a full-blown proposal, but bring this material to this audience and actually glean your reaction to what I have presented before we send in a full-blown research project to the National Institute of Health. I want to thank the audience very painstakingly for listening to me, because my slide happens to be very many. Thank you so much.